Happens in Idaho is a podcast following the trial of Lori Vallow Daybell. This podcast is hosted and produced by me, Kayla Waters, in correlation with my other podcast, True Crime Exposed. I have followed this case closely as it all came to an end here in Idaho, just 30 minutes north of where I grew up and currently live. I will be attending most days of Lori Daybell's trial at the Madison County Courthouse in Rexburg, Idaho. This is the area which the crimes took place, and this is the only location outside of Ada County that has access to the live stream of this trial. Each day, I will recap the trial for you here. Welcome to It Ends in Idaho, the Lori Daybell Trial. It's day 16 of witness testimony, and I'm back at the Madison County Courthouse to view the trial remotely. I'm curious when it's announced that first up will be Audrey Bertero. This is a friend of Lori Daybell's, but not a friend that we heard about often in the media before the trial. Lori herself even perks up, peeking around Jim Archibald's computer to watch her ex-friend testify against her. Audrey says that she resides in Missouri, and she describes Lori as a friend. They met at a conference in November of 2018 when Lori's home was offered as a place to stay. Tanya Rawlings asks Audrey, "Do you recall who else stayed?" And she replies that Zulema was there, Melanie Gibb, and she thinks Chad Daybell. She says that Chad and Lori would just look at each other and had kind of a vibe. They didn't seem flirtatious, but it seems like they knew each other or something. Audrey testifies that Chad had asked her to be Lori's friend because Lori needed a friend. Apparently, Audrey knew Chad before she knew Lori, and she says that the reason Lori needed a friend was because he couldn't talk to her all the time, he being Chad, and he was trying to keep her, you know, happy. Because he was married. This occurred in February of 2019, and Chad had asked Audrey this over the phone. She says that her and Lori would talk on the phone every few weeks, but sometimes it would be weekly. Tanya Rawlings asks if they got to know each other over this time, and Audrey said somewhat, but they usually spoke about spiritual things. In the summer of 2019, they met in person again at a spiritual event held in Utah. Audrey was living there in Utah at this time, and Lori had stayed in a hotel during this event. Zulema, Melanie Gibb, and some other women were also there. Tanya asks what Lori talked about at that time. And while Audrey says that she doesn't remember what was talked about during the whole trip, she does remember at the end that Lori was talking about wanting to work on her husband Charles. Tanya asks, "What does that mean?" And Audrey says, "Do you want me to back up a little bit?" Before going on to testify that before they had seen each other again, Lori had brought up this idea of people turning dark and becoming zombies, which meant people were possessed or had a bad spirit connected to them. She says that they hadn't talked for about 3 weeks when Lori all of a sudden brought this idea up to her. And then, there at the hotel in Utah, Lori brought it up again because it was something that Lori had been doing. The first time Audrey heard this from Lori was over the phone, and the second time was in the hotel room. She then says that everyone started to hold hands in the hotel room while sitting in a circle, and she didn't know what they were doing. Audrey testifies that she thought it might be something like a group prayer, so she joined thinking that, but it turned out they were trying to get a spirit out of Charles, and each girl started to say something. Audrey says that she herself didn't say anything when it came to her turn because she was uncomfortable, and soon after this, she left the room. She says she did not know what castings were at that time. So Miss Rawlings wants to know if her friendship ended with Lori following this situation, and she also wants to know if Audrey continued communication with Chad Daybell. Audrey answers yes to both of the questions. She testifies that she met Chad at an event in St. George when someone encouraged her to listen to him speak, and she bought some of his books. She read three of them. 2 months later, Chad reached out to Audrey on Facebook to open up conversation. They continue to talk on Facebook as well as on the phone. Lori keeps whispering to Jim Archibald as Audrey testifies. She says that they would talk mostly about spiritual things. She goes on to say that her friendship with Lori and Chad continued into late 2019. She learned then that Lori was moving to Rexburg, where Chad was also living. Audrey had met Tylee briefly in November of 2018 while staying at Lori's house in Arizona, so by the late fall of 2019, Audrey thought Tylee was at college, and she would ask Lori how Tylee was doing, but she said that Lori told her Tylee was not talking to her much these days. Audrey testifies that she also met Tammy Daybell and Garth Daybell. Once she had traveled to Idaho and she went to dinner with Chad, Tammy, and Garth. She says that in January or February of 2019, Chad told her that he had a near-death experience years earlier, and that a distant family member relayed to him that Tammy would die before she was 50. He insinuated that he would get married again, and later he revealed that he would get married to Lori following Tammy's death. Audrey says that Chad told her he had talked to Tammy about this revelation. Next, Tanya asks if Lori and Chad had talked to Audrey about prior lives. And Audrey says yes. Chad talked to her about being an apostle at the time Jesus Christ was alive, and his name was James. In that previous life, he had said that Lori had been his wife, Elena. After living in Utah, Audrey moved to Missouri. She testifies that Lori and her niece, Melanie Boudreau, told her they had nothing to do and they wanted to come visit church sites there in Missouri and see her in October of 2019. Audrey did not see Tylee during this trip. Audrey had stayed one night in Melanie and Lori's hotel room. Now Tanya goes back to that experience in the hotel room in Utah when Audrey first learned about castings. Audrey testifies that Lori started using the term zombie near the summer of 2019. She says that Chad had this idea about if someone was light or dark, meaning they were either predominantly a good person or predominantly a bad person. Audrey says that Lori claimed her husband Charles was dark, and by the end of their friendship, Lori was saying that her children and Tammy were also dark. Lori also told Audrey that one or two of Melanie Boudreau's children were dark as well. In the fall of 2019, Lori brought up the idea of working on Tammy because she had a spirit in her that needed to be taken out. Audrey testifies that she told Lori she did not want to be involved. But then Audrey pauses because she's crying and she can't seem to get the words out. Jim Archibald and Lori Daybell are staring intently at Audrey. When she's able to speak, she says, "I'm sorry." And then she says that Lori highly pressured her to do this casting, telling her that Audrey needed to help because she's supposed to be Lori's friend, and Chad had asked her specifically to be Lori's friend. Audrey says that she told Lori she doesn't do this stuff in her own life, but that she would say a prayer. So she testifies that she said a prayer and told her Heavenly Father that she doesn't know what's going on, but if something does need to be taken out of Tammy, please remove it. Audrey testifies that the first time she participated back in Utah during the summer of 2019, the casting was done on Charles. She was in Europe in July of 2019 when Charles dies just a few weeks later. After the casting on Tammy, Lori told Audrey that it didn't work. Tanya asks if Audrey remembers receiving a text from Lori stating that they did good work and they got the spirit out, but that it got back in and they have to keep working. Tanya mentions that in this text, Lori said, "Audrey, any ideas would be appreciated." And she asks Audrey why Lori would be asking her for advice and if she had any special knowledge. Audrey testifies that she did not. Audrey goes on to testify that at the end of the friendship, when she heard Chad Daybell say something like, "Why is the body still alive?" she realized that something was going on. And Tanya asks, "What does that mean?" Audrey says that they didn't want to help the person. They didn't want that person to be alive. She also testifies that in late October of 2019, she traveled to Hawaii to visit Melanie Boudreaux and Lori Vallow. They picked her up at the airport after inviting her on the basis that Melanie was in need of a friend because she was going through a hard time. Lori is whispering a lot to her attorneys through this testimony. Audrey goes on to say that shortly after arriving, Lori had told Audrey that Tammy had passed away. Audrey says she had no idea yet, so she asked how long it had been, and Lori told her it happened about a week earlier. Audrey starts crying when she testifies that Lori had told her Tammy passed away in her sleep. Audrey recalls that during that Hawaii trip, the girls rode bikes together and spent a lot of time at the beach. Tanya asks what Audrey recalls about Lori's behavior during this time. She says that Lori seemed agitated one second, and then her mood would swing and she would be happy. She had never seen Lori like this before, although she notes that she hadn't seen Lori much in person anyway. Audrey also testifies that there were times that Lori would get a phone call and she would have to leave to talk for a long period of time. Lori only seemed happy when she was talking about Chad. Audrey said she told Lori that she was going to go home soon after arriving. She says that she didn't tell them this, but it was because she was uncomfortable. Lori then said she was actually going to be leaving soon, and Melanie said she was not ready to leave, but she didn't want to be alone. So since Lori was leaving, Audrey testifies that she decided to stay in Hawaii with Melanie Boudreaux. And she left Sunday of that same week, while Lori had left around Wednesday. But Audrey didn't leave Hawaii and travel home to Missouri. She left Hawaii and traveled to Idaho, claiming that she wanted to pay her condolences to Chad and Tammy in person. But she stayed in Lori Vallow's condo in Rexburg during this Idaho trip. And while she was there, she witnessed Chad and Lori interacting very romantically. She says they were kissing and hugging. At this time, Lori starts laughing as she leans over to John Thomas to whisper something. Audrey goes on to testify that Melanie Boudreaux was also staying at Lori's condo while she was there in Idaho. Audrey also testifies that Chad would come back late at night, and while she didn't always see him, she did witness him spend the night there. She says that she also went to the Rexburg Temple with Chad, Melanie Boudreaux, and Lori. Tanya Rawlings has no further questions. And now Jim Archibald walks to the podium to conduct cross-examination. And I'll warn you here, it gets interesting. He starts with asking, "If I have this right, you spent time with Chad and Lori across 5 different states? Utah, Idaho, Arizona, Hawaii, and Missouri?" Audrey testifies yes, before going on to say that she is a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She is 34 years old and single. She works remotely, and she would attend the Preparing the People conferences often. So Jim asks, what are they preparing the people for? She says that this is preparation for the end times relayed in the scriptures. So Jim goes on to ask, were these books you bought from Chad Daybell about the end of the world? And she testifies that they were fictional books and characters living through times like this. While Chad did tell her it was fictional, though, he also said the books were based on real spiritual experiences and revelations. Jim Archibald asks, is the end of the world going to be happy or sad? Is preparing the people going to prepare for a happy or sad event? And Audrey testifies that it would be a happy event. So Jim asks, what's the point in preparing if it's going to be a happy event? The prosecution objects based on argumentative, and Judge Boyce overrules the objection. Audrey testifies it was about preparing to be happy and live with Jesus when he comes again. Jim asks Audrey if she ever met Alex Cox, and she says that she did, just one time while in Utah. She also testifies that she met Charles Vallow one time in November of 2018. Jim Archibald asks if he looked like someone who was possessed or had a demon in him, and Audrey says, no, not when I met him. Jim goes on to ask Audrey if she reads the scriptures and if there is stuff about casting out evil spirits in there. She says not particularly, but yes, it is in the Bible. Audrey goes on to testify that in the scriptures, Jesus cast out evil spirits, but during the casting on Charles in the hotel room in Utah, it was a very sudden and uncomfortable situation. Jim asks if the group was praying to Jesus to cast out this spirit, and she says she doesn't believe they were asking Jesus to do this work for them. The prosecution makes another objection, but Judge Boyce overrules. Mr. Archibald says, if they were not calling to Jesus, were they calling to the devil? Were they calling to God? And Audrey just says no. Now Jim asks Audrey if she called the cops after Charles died, and she testifies no. And he says, so did you just think these ladies were being weird? And she testifies yes. He goes on to say, so you thought these were a bunch of weirdos and you didn't want to hang out with them anymore? And Audrey says yes. Jim says, did you say, hey ladies, this is stupid, I don't want to do this? But Audrey testifies no. And Jim asks, but you kept getting together with them. And Audrey says, no, I didn't really ever see Melanie Gibb again. But Jim Archibald notes that she kept in contact with Chad Daybell. And Audrey testifies yes. She goes on to say that she first heard of zombies from Lori, and she can't remember if Lori told her that she heard this from Chad. So Jim asks, at any time during these spiritual conversations with Chad, did you ever think this guy is a weirdo and he's leading me astray? Audrey testifies that she did have questions. And Jim says, by the end of October 2019, you were still a follower though, right? And Audrey testifies yes. She thought Chad was doing good work. And Jim says, so you bought his book, you went to conferences, you called him, you messaged him on Facebook. And she stops Jim. Audrey says, no, no, he messaged me on Facebook, but yes. Jim goes on to ask Audrey if Chad was a spiritual leader she thought she needed to follow. And she says yes. And Jim says, so since you're a lady who followed Chad, could it be possible that other ladies were following him as well? And Audrey testifies, yes, it's possible. Jim asks, like Lori, like Melanie Gibb, like Zulema? And Audrey answers yes to each woman. Now Jim says, so Chad told you in a prior life I was a prophet named Medusala? And she says yes. And Jim asks, and you believed it? And Audrey again says yes. And then Jim notes that in another life, Chad told Audrey he was an apostle of Jesus Christ, and she believed it. She testifies yes. And Jim says, so that's two prior lives. Do you remember how many total he talked about? And Audrey says she does not remember. Now Jim says, did he ever say in one of my prior lives I was a loser? But Audrey says no. And Jim notes that in all of his prior lives, Chad mentioned that he was great. And Audrey agrees. He goes on to say that James, who Chad was in a previous life, was either the brother or the friend of Jesus Christ. And Audrey testifies she thinks it was the brother. So Lori was Elena, who had been married to this James in a prior life. And Audrey testifies yes. Jim goes on to say, Chad told you that they were friends with Jesus and walked in Palestine with Jesus. And Audrey testifies yes. Before Jim asks her, and Chad told you that you were married to Jesus. There is an objection by the prosecution for overscope, but it's overruled by Judge Boyce. So Jim asks, what was your name? And Audrey testifies, Joanna. Jim goes on to say, so when Chad told you that in a previous life you were Joanna and you had been married to Jesus, what did you think of that? Audrey testifies that she thought it could be true because she trusted Chad. And Jim says that she thought it could be true because it was cool and it sounded amazing. Audrey lets out a laugh when she testifies yes. And Jim Archibald goes on to say, so you thought Chad Daybell is telling me about my past, he can probably predict the future too. And Audrey testifies yes. Jim goes on to say, because he was writing books about the end of the world, he was rating people, not losers. That gave you the feeling of, I'm somebody. And Audrey testifies yes. Before Jim asks her why she moved to Missouri. And although Audrey testifies that through prayer she just personally felt it, Jim notes that it might be because Jesus was supposed to come to Missouri according to Chad. But Audrey just replies, it was my personal feeling. And Jim asks, do you believe that Jesus is going to come back to Missouri? An objection comes from the prosecution based on her beliefs being irrelevant. And Judge Boyce sustains this objection. So Jim moves on to ask, did Chad tell you that? And Audrey testifies, it's a part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I will note that I went to this church as a child and I've never heard of that, but maybe I didn't pay attention enough. So Jim asks Audrey if she believes that Jesus will be coming back to Missouri specifically, not anywhere else, such as Jerusalem. There's another objection from the prosecution about her beliefs being irrelevant, and Judge Boyce sustains the objection. So Jim moves on to ask about the church historical sites that she visited in Missouri with Lori Vallow and Melanie Boudreau. Audrey testifies that they went to the temple in Kansas City and to Liberty Jail where Prophet Joseph Smith had been jailed. Jim asks why that's significant. There's an objection from the prosecution for relevance, but Judge Boyce notes that it came up in direct, so he will overrule it for now. Audrey goes on to testify that that's a place Joseph Smith was in jail while being punished by the people in Missouri. Jim goes on to ask if during this trip Melanie and Lori took to Missouri, if they all performed another casting, and Audrey testifies yes. Jim says, so during this casting in a hotel room, you and two other ladies, what do? You said you prayed to Jesus. Were there other prayers made to cast out this spirit? And Audrey testifies, I guess I don't know what you mean. I said a prayer to Heavenly Father saying I didn't know what was going on, but if he would help. And Jim asks if she wanted to help Tammy. Audrey testifies, yes. And Jim asks if she thought saying a prayer would help Tammy get rid of the evil spirit. Audrey says, if there was something going on, I was asking for help. And Jim asks, were you and Melanie and Lori holding hands similar to what you did in Utah for Charles? But Audrey says, no, I don't think so. Mr. Archibald then says, during the summer of 2019, you heard the term zombies. Had you heard that before, other than in scary movies? And Audrey says, no. So Jim asks, did that term come from Chad Daybell? And Audrey says that she doesn't know who it came from. At the time, it seems like it came from Lori. So Jim asks, did Lori say this is something that Chad has taught? But Audrey says she doesn't remember Lori claiming that. Now Jim asks, did the light and dark scale come from Chad Daybell? And Audrey says yes. So Jim asks if this was his way of predicting if you're good or if you're bad. And Audrey says yes. Jim asks if it was predicting if someone would live or die. But Audrey says no. Jim then asks what her score was. But she laughs when she says she doesn't remember. So he just asks if it was a good score. And she testifies yes. Jim goes on to ask Audrey if during the castings for Charles and Tammy, did she ever think someone was in danger? I should call the cops. But she testifies no. She didn't think that until the end when she dissolved the friendship and she felt like she was in danger. And Jim asks, when did you dissolve the friendship? Audrey testifies that it was when she left Idaho. And Jim asks, during all the other times you met with them in other states like Utah, Arizona, on the beach, you never thought it was weird before that? But Audrey testifies that on the beach, she was uncomfortable because they were talking all the time about Melanie and her kids. Now Jim says, so you felt so uncomfortable, you left Hawaii to go to Idaho with them. They made you buy a ticket to Idaho instead of going home to Missouri. And Audrey testifies, no, but I have a big heart and I didn't want Melanie to be alone and she said she was going through a hard time. So Jim asks, were you good friends with Melanie? But Audrey testifies she had only met Melanie in Missouri one time before the Hawaii trip. She goes on to say, like I said, I have a big heart. And Jim asks, that's what friends do, right? They want to help each other? And Audrey testifies, yes. Now Jim says, so when you went to the Rexburg Temple with Chad and Lori and Melanie, they were your friends, right? And she says that she was the one who asked to go to the temple. It's a place that they could worship God. And Jim asks if it was also a place she could be with her friends. Audrey testifies that the temple is a place of peace. And with that, Jim concludes his cross-examination. Now Tanya Rawlings stands for the prosecution and she wants to ask some clarifying questions. She says, Chad was not with you in five states. He was not there in Missouri or Hawaii, right? And Audrey testifies, no, he was not. And then Tanya asks if when she participated in these castings, whose hotel room was she in? Audrey testifies that they were in Lori's hotel room. So Tanya notes that Lori was the person who told Audrey the person who needed to be casted upon. And Audrey testifies, yes, she organized it. Tanya says she picked the target. And Audrey testifies, yes. Tanya asks Audrey if after performing the casting in Utah on Charles, if he died just shortly after. And she testifies, yes. And then Tanya goes on to say that there was another casting done on Tammy. Shortly after, she died. And Audrey testifies, yes. Now Tanya says, the defense asked you why you terminated this friendship, and you said you were scared and in fear. Why was that? And Audrey says it was because of a conversation that she had with Lori. Tanya asks, did she make threats to you? And Audrey says she did. So Tanya asks her what Lori had said, but there is no answer for a long time. So Tanya repeats the question in another way, saying, what threats did she make to you? There's an objection from the defense because it's out of scope. But Judge Boyce says that this came up in cross-examination, so he overrules the objection. Now Audrey goes on to tell quite the tell. She says that during her trip in Idaho, she told Lori she was going to go upstairs and pack her bag and leave early. Audrey said she told Lori she was going to go to bed because she didn't want to spend any more time with Lori. She also says that she asked Lori if there was anything bigger going on that she didn't know about, but Lori said no. And Audrey goes on to say that she took her word because she's trusting Lori. And then she says, "And I turned to go up the stairs." At this time, she lifts her hand to her neck and she starts crying, before going on to say, Lori started laughing as if she thought something was hilarious. She said, "You're so naive and so trusting. You're like a little child. You will believe anything that anyone will tell you. You believe the world is all rainbows and that everyone is a good person." Tanya says, "Okay, so I want to focus on the threats she made to you." And Audrey says, "She threatened to kill me." Lori starts laughing at this time and looks down to her page, shaking her head. Audrey continues. She laughed and she said she would cut me up and something about that she was not in the mental place to do that, but that she would get herself in the mental place to do it if only there was enough bleach to clean up all the blood. And she said something about trash bags and something about how she would bury me. Now Audrey is crying a lot. She goes to grab a tissue. Tanya pauses for a moment before saying, "I don't think I have any further questions." Now Jim stands up to conduct a little more cross-examination. He starts by asking if the conversation that Lori is having with Audrey in October of 2019 was in Idaho. And she testifies yes. So he goes on to ask, "You had been with her previously in Missouri in October of 2019. You had been with her previously in Hawaii in October of 2019. Then you followed Lori from Hawaii to Idaho in October of 2019. Audrey testifies yes to all three questions. And then Jim says, "Then you decide it's time to go home to Missouri." And Audrey testifies, "I'm sorry, I did not follow her. I did not follow Lori." And Jim says, "Okay, you just happened to go from one state to the place she lived." The prosecution makes an objection, citing argumentative, and Judge Boyce sustains the objection. So Jim moves on, asking if this conversation was before they went to the temple or after. And Audrey testifies after. And Jim says, "So Lori starts laughing and talks about unicorns and rainbows and that she would cut you up and put you in a trash bag and she didn't have enough bleach for all the blood." And Audrey testifies, "Yes, she mentioned trash bags." There's an objection from the prosecution citing speculation, but Judge Boyce overrules it. So Jim asks, "Did she say I killed my kids and now I'll kill you too?" There's another objection from the prosecution, but again, it's overruled. Audrey testifies that she didn't know anything about the kids. So Jim asks if Lori told Audrey she killed Charles and would kill her too. But Audrey testifies, no, she didn't mention Charles. She mentioned that she said something about seeing someone take their last breaths. And Jim says, "Do you remember testifying under oath for a grand jury?" Audrey replies, "Yes." And Jim says, "Do you want the jury to believe that you didn't make this crap up after not previously testifying about this?" And Audrey says, "I was scared." And Jim replies, "So you're saying you were scared and that's why you didn't testify at a previous hearing under oath about this ever?" Audrey replies, "I did not make it up." And Jim has no further questions. The prosecution stands asking if they're able to ask a follow-up question, but Judge Boyce denies this as cross-examination and redirect has already happened for each side. I'll be honest with you guys here, and maybe your opinion differs from mine, and that's okay because neither of us will truly ever know, right? But I find it hard to believe Audrey's story. Like Jim said, there were previous hearings. She's met with prosecutors and police before this. She testified under oath in front of a grand jury, and this story of Lori threatening her to kill her had never come out before. I just find it really hard to believe. From what I saw watching the trial live, it seemed that Audrey came out of the initial cross-examination done by Jim Archibald feeling a little uneasy. I think she really wanted to distance herself from this case. I might not have made it as clear here, but she over and over again mentioned how uncomfortable she was, how much she didn't like all of this stuff. But then Jim points out that she continuously hung out with these people. She continuously kept in contact with these people. She came out of the cross-examination looking a lot more involved than I think she wanted to. And in my opinion, it almost seems that this story was a panic to really get some empathy, to really distance herself from this, to really make it seem like she hated these people. I don't know. I just find it hard to believe that after being threatened with your life and you've seen multiple people die connected to these people, that you would still spend the night in the home and not immediately run out and never call the cops? It's just a little suspicious to me that this story had never come up. And while I am not Team Lori in any way, I do have to give props to her defense team during this cross-examination because they did a great job with this witness. Next up to testify is Vincent Kayakumanu. He works for the Fremont County Sheriff's Office and has been there for the last 18 years. He's currently a sergeant in the detective division. He was previously a supervisor over patrol and had worked in the jail. I actually think in a previous episode, I mentioned his name and I said that we had already heard from him. However, I was wrong. I had already heard from him, but I had not covered his testimony yet on this podcast, so I apologize if you were confused. But here we are, with Sergeant Kayakumanu's testimony. Lindsay Blake will conduct the direct examination. He says that he received a phone call in the early morning hours of October 19th, 2019. It was a missed call from a deputy about an unattended death. He learned that this was the death of Tammy Daybell. He was the on-call detective. He had been assisting on a shooting earlier that morning, and when he returned, he fell asleep, missing the next call. He reached out an hour and a half later. But the deputy had already been in contact with another officer named Matthew. Both of them take calls when they're not on duty. Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies that the deputy indicated there were no suspicious circumstances surrounding Tammy Daybell's death. Lindsay asks, at some point, are you aware if an investigation was started into the circumstances surrounding her death? And Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies, yes. It was not started immediately after the death, however. The Fremont County Sheriff's Office got involved approximately at the end of October 2019. So Lindsay asks if this was within a few weeks of Tammy's death, and he testifies yes. He personally became involved at the end of March 2020. Lindsay asks if when he became involved, was he aware of the other investigations being conducted by other agencies? And he says yes, he was aware of the investigation into the attempted shooting of Brandon Boudreaux out of Gilbert, Arizona, and he was aware of the investigation into two missing kids, Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallow. He was also aware of the investigation involving Charles Vallow's death down in Arizona. The sergeant goes on to testify that he assisted in the investigation regarding the missing children. And after becoming involved, he was made aware of an attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell. Lindsay Blake asks if the sergeant reviewed a message that Tammy had sent to her son, Mark Daybell, and he testifies that he did. So the prosecution asks to admit and publish Exhibit 291. Copies are handed to the defense and Judge Boyce. The exhibit is presented and the email is from tammy.daybell@gmail.com, sent to mark.daybell@missionary.org. I'll reiterate a bit of this email to you. Tammy says that on the same day she was coming home from clogging, around 9:15 p.m., she backed into their front driveway. She tells Mark she was getting items from the back seat. They were freezer meals she had made. And then all of a sudden, someone was at the front of the car. She thought it was their dad, Chad Daybell, or Garth. And she says, no, it was actually a guy in a black ski mask pointing a rifle at her. She says she was in a bit of shock, and she said, what are you doing? And then she realized that the rifle was a paintball gun with a thing on top. Tammy also says in this email that this man pulled the trigger and she could hear the sounds of the empty paintball gun. She writes to Mark that she was more annoyed than scared because he was standing between her and the door so she couldn't get inside. She says she was more scared later on when her brain realized what could have happened. She writes that her first thought was to hit him with her clogging shoes. And then she says this man ran around the north side of the house. She ran inside and got Chad and Garth. They looked outside, but no one could find him, so they called the police. They suspect that it was a bipolar teenager from down the road. Detective Kaya Kumanu testifies that this is an accurate representation of the events that day in Tammy's own words. Now the prosecution admits Exhibit 107B. It's from the Homer J. Maximus account, and it's a review of the computer search history. Alex Cox was the owner of this account, and Lindsay Blake asks Sergeant Kaya Kumanu what stood out to him. On October 1st, 2019, there's a search for directions to Mesa, Arizona from the Gallup, New Mexico area. At 7:52 p.m. that day, a search for 3875 East Phelps Street, Gilbert, Arizona, 85295 is done. On October 2nd, 2019, the same day that Brandon Boudreau was shot at, there's a search for 3875 East Phelps Street, Gilbert, Arizona, at 7:17 a.m. On October 8, 2019, the day before Tammy Daybell is shot at, there's a search for 6.5 Grendel Drop from 100 yards to 200 yards, 6.5 Grendel Drop from 100 yards to 300 yards. On October 9th, 2019, there's a search for several different AR-15 uppers, muzzle energy of 6.5 Grendel, and frog tog sizing for pants. On that same day, October 9th, 2019, items were purchased at Sportsman Warehouse in Idaho Falls by Alex Cox. On October 10th, 2019, searches are done for how to prep your AR for the cold, how to make your AR function in cold weather, AR-15 cold weather operation, and how does Hornady one-shot work in the cold. On October 12th, 2019, more searches are done for how to attach cover to ghillie suit, will a 6.5 Grendel shoot through a windshield, FBI simulation shooting a 5.56 through car doors, walls, and what caliber would penetrate a windshield. There's also searches for 2008 Dodge Dakota steel body thickness, what gauge steel are the doors on a Dodge Dakota, how thick is 22 gauge steel, and drill baffles to make a suppression. Sergeant Kaya Kumanu testifies that it stood out to him because Tammy drove a Dodge Dakota. He goes on to testify about the warrant served on the townhomes and that during that warrant they found guns. The investigation determined that some of these guns were likely used in the attempted shooting of Tammy Daybell. Certain guns did stand out to investigators, and he would recognize a picture of these guns. And while the prosecution just wants to present pictures of these guns, both guns are actually physically there at the courthouse in Ada County. So John Thomas makes an objection for the defense. He wants to have the actual guns brought in, since he will likely be saying that these could be mistaken as a paintball gun. But Lindsay Blake says that the state can present evidence how they see fit, and a picture shows a good description. The judge says that if the defense wants to have them presented, they can do that during their cross-examination. And John says to let the state know that they need to bring those up because they will be asking for that. So a picture is shown of the two guns. One has a smaller little scope, and the bottom one has a larger scope, which could be mistaken as a hopper, which is what holds the paintballs inside of it. The bottom is also a 6.5 Grendel. This matches some of the searches done from the Homer J. Maximus account. The detective testifies that he's familiar with paintball guns. He grew up and used them, and he's used them in training. He also has experience with AR-15s through training and his law enforcement career. And he says that you can put several accessories and optics on them. Now Lindsay Blake presents State Exhibit 282 as a demonstrative exhibit. It's a picture of a paintball gun. But John Thomas objects, saying that it's inflammatory, it's prejudiced because none of them know what was seen that day. Lindsay Blake says there was a description by Tammy in that email referencing a hopper. But Judge Boyce sustains the objection, so Lindsay has to ask some questions connecting the AR-15 recovered to what a paintball gun might look like. Now the detective goes on to testify about the requested warrants for two geofence locations, the first being 202 North 900 East, which was Tamara and Chad Daybell's residence. The other was 3462 North Salem Highway, which is the LDS church just down the road from the Daybell residence. The date requested was for October 18th through October 19th, 2019. They requested 150 meters at each location, and this warrant was granted. The Google identification numbers do not tell them who the device is connected to. Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies that they have to get another warrant, and then Google can determine who the device is connected to. So Detective Kayakumanu went through the numbers and the two geofence locations with Detective Stubbs. They narrowed it to the numbers that passed through both geofences. Another detective recognized a number on this geofence warrant, who had written a warrant for that number in reference to the Homer J. Maximus account. The device associated with that account was associated with Alex Cox. This device was shown at the Salem Church at 10:07 p.m. on October 19th, 2019. This is the date that Tammy died. Chad calls 911 the following morning. So Alex's phone is at the church at 10:07 p.m., but then there is no data for this device until 11:53 p.m., when the Homer J. Maximus account is later picked up on Wi-Fi traveling on Highway 20, 7 miles away from the Salem Church. So for just under 2 hours, Alex is there near the Daybell residence on the same date that Tammy is believed to have been killed. Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies that Chad made statements that he was at home that night, yet none of his devices were shown at home. The funeral for Tammy Daybell was held on October 22nd, 2019, 3 days after she's pronounced dead, and the funeral is in Springfield, Utah. Lindsay Blake asks if she had life insurance policies. The detective testifies that Tammy did have 3 insurance policies. One was a retirement plan, and he goes on to say that the life insurance did pay out to Chad Daybell. So Lindsay asks if Chad Daybell has any charges for insurance fraud. And Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies, yes, 2 counts are pending in Fremont County. At this time, Lindsay suggests that it might be close to lunch. Judge Boyce agrees, and everyone heads their separate ways for an hour-long break. Court is back in session by 1:03 p.m., and Lindsay Blake continues her direct examination of Sergeant Kayakumanu. Now, State Exhibit 280 is being brought into the courtroom. These are the firearms. So during lunch, it looks like the prosecution decided they would present the physical guns themselves. They're brought in by an officer and made inoperable. Two other items will be brought in as well, and Sergeant Kayakumanu steps down to view the items laying on a table. He identifies the Alexander Grendel 6.5 assault rifle with the scope on it. Next to that gun, there is something Alex used to make a home suppressor. Lindsay Blake asks some more questions about how the AR could be mistaken for a paintball gun, and with that, she concludes her direct examination. John Thomas will conduct the cross-examination. He asks questions relating to the investigation, why Sergeant Kayakumanu was asleep and missed the call on the night that Tammy died, who was the original sergeant on the case in October of 2019, and who else worked on the investigation. John Thomas ends up publishing the email previously published by the prosecution, Exhibit 291. And John points out this email was 3 pages long, although Sergeant Kayakumanu only read out loud one portion of the email earlier. John notes that on one of these pages, Tammy is emailing her son Mark about a neighbor who had their dog outside, and someone drove by and stole the dog. Miss Price got into her vehicle and chased down the person to get her dog back, which she was able to do. So John asks if this part of the email had become pertinent to this investigation, but Sergeant Kayakumanu says no. So John has the sergeant read another piece of the email. It reads, "The crazy dog lady had her husband come back to get the dog, and I surprised him when I came into the driveway. He came through the fence, and that would explain why he ran over the north side of the house. This is why he threatened her with the gun." She writes that this is actually a pretty good theory and that they're going to do some amateur sleuthing. Sergeant Kayakumanu says that he did not interview the dog-stealing lady's husband. He said he did not think it was a credible lead. John asks the sergeant if anyone investigating this attempted shooting found any bullet holes. And Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies, "To my knowledge, no." Now John has Sergeant Kayakumanu read a portion of the email sent by Tammy where she writes that they originally thought it was a bipolar teenager from down the road. The detective testifies that this kid had autism and lived a lot further away from the Daybell residence than walking distance. So John asks, "I don't want to bring an autistic child into this, but did you talk with him?" And the sergeant testifies that he did not. So John states that the sergeant didn't talk with any of the people mentioned in the email. Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies that they talked with the neighbors Matt and Reagan Price, and it was Matt's theory that it was the crazy dog lady's husband, but detectives did not follow up on the other theories in Tammy's email. Now John asks that 107B be brought back up. John asks if there were more Google searches than what was presented on the slideshow, and Sergeant Kayakumanu says yes. John Thomas now starts asking about the geofencing, and he asks about that 150-meter range. He asks Sergeant Kayakumanu about how far this distance is, in other terms. Earlier, John had asked if Sergeant Kayakumanu went to college before becoming an officer, and he had testified no. So after asking some questions that the detective said, "I don't know," to about this specific distance, John says, "Well, I went to college, so I know it's this far." John goes on to ask about the pieces of metal that detectives thought could have been used as a silencer on that gun. And he asks if there were any drill holes. Sergeant Kayakumanu testifies that there were 2 on each side, but that the holes didn't go all the way through. And John says, so it couldn't be used as a silencer. It would blow the gun up. And Sergeant Kaya Kumanu testifies correct. With that, John has no further questions. Lindsay Blake will conduct redirect for the prosecution. She asks if on the morning Tammy died, did Fremont County have information involving all of the investigations? The one of the missing kids, the one of Charles Vallow's death, the one of the attempted shooting of Brandon Boudreau? And Sergeant Kaya Kumanu testifies they did not. Lindsay asks the sergeant if he thought the bipolar teenager was a plausibility, but he testifies no. He goes on to testify that they didn't get a lot of reports of masked gunmen in that area. Lindsay Blake asks if there is a canal at the end of 200 North. The defense objects, saying that they are not going into that today and it's beyond the scope. Judge Boyce sustains this objection. And I am so curious, what are they talking about? What did the defense mean? They're not going into that today. So Lindsay goes on to ask if, when he conducts an investigation, does he go where the evidence leads him? And Sergeant Kaya Kumanu testifies yes. That is what he did in this case. Lindsay asks if the sergeant was unable to talk to Tammy Daybell about the attempted shooting because she was killed 9 to 10 days later. And the sergeant answers that is correct. With that, Sergeant Kaya Kumanu is released as a witness and led off the witness stand. Following this testimony, an issue is brought up. The defense found out that Melanie Pelosky, Ian Pelosky's wife, and formerly known as Melanie Boudreau, read articles in reference to this case, which is against the exclusionary rule. The couple came together to testify. They are with attorneys, and Melanie admitted she violated this exclusionary rule. So the defense asks that the court conduct an inquiry into the witnesses and both of them be excluded from testifying. Lindsay Blake says that the state provided the information about Melanie to the defense, but there was no indication that Ian also heard the testimony. Judge Boyce rules that they will check with the witness. Ian Pelosky is brought to the stand following the mid-afternoon break. Judge Boyce asks questions about the exclusionary rule. Ian says that Melanie did not listen to anything, but that she did read some headlines about Brandon's testimony because they are in ongoing litigation. He says that he has not listened. He has read headlines, but he has not clicked on them. Jim Archibald is first to ask questions in lieu of the objection. Ian testifies that he is married to formerly known Melanie Boudreau, and they've been married for about 3 or 4 years now. Jim asks if Ian was in the same meeting Melanie was with the prosecutors. He says no, they were separate. Ian says that they arrived Monday of this week, and this is their third day in Idaho. Jim asks why Ian brought an attorney with him. And Ian responds that this is a complicated matter and he felt more comfortable with his attorney available. And Jim asks, are you aware he is here with another witness? And Ian testifies no. Jim then asks Ian if he's aware that attorneys legally have to let their clients know all information. The prosecution objects, and Judge Boyce sustains. So then Jim says, are you claiming he didn't tell you any information about Zulema's testimony? And Ian testifies no. So Jim Archibald has made it clear here that Ian Pelosky and Zulema Pastinas share the same attorney. The prosecution makes an objection, citing that this is way beyond the exclusionary. And Judge Boyce sustains this objection, noting to Jim that he is only to ask about the exclusionary order. Ian makes it clear that he did not read any articles or listen to any audio about previous witness testimony before he came himself to testify. Lindsay Blake will conduct the direct examination of Ian Pelosky. He testifies that he first met Lori around the end of November 2019, and he met Chad Daybell around this time too. They were together, Chad and Lori, and Ian met them in person. They lived in the apartment next to Melanie Boudreau at that time. Ian testifies that Melanie and Lori had a very close, supportive relationship. And Lindsay asks, did you go to Lori and Chad first before asking Melanie to marry you? And he testifies, yes. He said he saw and spoke with Lori less than a dozen times, and he talked with Chad even less. So Lindsay asks if he recalled any conversations he had with Chad when Lori was not present. But Ian testifies not that he can recall. He did, though, have conversations with Lori when Chad was not present. Ian recalls that Lori often talked about her religious beliefs. She talked with him about possession, locking Satan away, and about castings. Lindsay asks if other people were present during these conversations, and Ian testifies, yes, Melanie, his now wife, was there as well. Ian testifies that for Thanksgiving of 2019, he and Melanie headed down to Arizona. When they returned to Rexburg, Idaho, Lori and Chad were not there, and they did not know where they were at. When Ian started coming around in late 2019, he never met Tylee Ryan or JJ Vallo, although he testifies that he did know of their existence. And Lindsay asks if there was any indication of children living in Lori's apartment. Ian says, yes, there were backpacks and children's luggage. However, there were no signs of children in the bedrooms. And Ian had never heard any children in the background of the phone calls he had with Lori and Chad. He also doesn't recall Lori and Chad ever mentioning Lori's children. Now Lindsay Blake asks if Ian was open to hearing Lori's teachings and why. He testifies that he was, because he's religious. He says he's a member of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and a large part of their belief is revelations. He says part of that is keeping an open mind when things come. So if he could learn something new, it would be through one of the Lord's servants or through revelation directly. At that time, he was going through a religious renaissance of his own because he had recently gone through a rough divorce, so he was rebuilding himself. Now, Lindsay asks how long it took for him to know that he was not open to Lori's teachings. And he testifies it was only a few days. He says, the things of possession was one of them. The ranking of people being light or dark sounded like something that couldn't change, predetermined since contracts were signed before they came to this earth. Lindsay asks, who told you about the light and dark rating systems? Ian testifies that the first time he heard of this was from Melanie B., who heard it from Chad. And Lindsay asks, did Lori talk to you about the light and dark? Ian says it was referred to. And then Lindsay asks who Lori said was possessed. Ian testifies she said law enforcement was. He goes on to testify that Lori called Detective Hermosillo and Detective Hope with the Rexburg Police Department zombies. And Lindsay asks if anything caused him concern at some point. Ian says numerous things. The thing that really turned it for me was the morning after my marriage to Melanie. She dumped her fears onto me. She shared everything she was worried about and said there was a mess going on. We were staying at the Bellagio in Las Vegas with my two children at the time. The next morning, I got up and my daughter was gone. I couldn't find her for 15 minutes. No sound. She was nowhere. She came out from behind the curtain and thought it was hilarious. But for me, after everything I heard, I was terrified and said, I'm not going to give this a chance. He testifies that he was concerned about Tylee Ryan and JJ Vallo. Ian says he had also heard of the attempted shooting of Brandon Boudreau, so he was concerned for Brandon and his own ex-wife's safety. So he met with law enforcement on December 5th or 6th of 2019. Ian had married Melanie on November 30th, 2019. So less than a week later, he's meeting with law enforcement. Lindsay Blake asks what they wanted his assistance with. And Ian testifies that it was to listen and observe and report back and make recordings for them. Lindsay asks, in those recordings, did Chad or Lori ever confess directly to a crime? But Ian testifies no. Ian goes on to testify that Lori and Chad had an arrogant, flippant attitude towards law enforcement. They said that they all needed to get out of town. It was mostly Chad telling Melanie and Ian to get out of town. Chad was more serious and Lori was more lighthearted about it all. Ian goes on to testify that his wife Melanie was susceptible because she looked to Lori and Chad as a mother and father figure. He said she was open to these religious beliefs and she presented them to him like, hey, this is what they are thinking, what do you think? Miss Blake asks, is Melanie closer to Lori or Chad? And Ian testifies, absolutely Lori. With that, the prosecution has no further questions. John Thomas stands to conduct cross-examination, but he mentions that he planned to hear the recordings, and that was a large part of his cross-examination. The defense is going to introduce exhibits that will take some time because of this, and there will have to be a motion heard outside the presence of the jury. So for now, they decide to conclude for the afternoon with today's proceedings. Ian Pelosky will be back on the stand the following morning for cross-examination. This podcast was produced by True Crime Exposed and is hosted by me, Kayla Waters. Please leave us a 5-star written review as we are a new podcast and help spread the word.